The choices you have to make can be difficult and may alter your life forever. When you're under too much pressure, it's hard to go it alone. Now you don't have to. Whether you struggle with anxiety, depression, time management, family issues, relationships, self-sabotage, guilt, shame, or just need some wisdom and helpful insight, this program is the answer. Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley. Kamish is a licensed mental health therapist with HealingYourHiddenHurts.com and who also shares her knowledge as an expert author, speaker, and radio personality. You don't have to just survive. You can thrive. Here's Kamish Nunley.
Welcome to another episode of Healing Conversations. I'm your host, Kamish Nunley, and today joining us as our featured guest is author of Raising Queens, an inspirational speaker, and someone who, in my opinion, epitomizes a true makeshift mom, is Miss Cynthia Newman. Thanks for joining us today, Cynthia.
Oh, thanks for having me, Kamish. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And today's topic, we will be discussing creating yourself as a makeshift mom. Before we begin today, I'd like to remind everyone, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment for today's guest, feel free to call 888-463-6748. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show. You can also submit your feedback for our show by visiting TalkZone.com and clicking on Healing Conversations. Lastly, if you'd like to join us for a more lively interactive discussion on Facebook, just visit Facebook.com/groups/Healing Conversations. Today's show is brought to you by HealingYourHiddenHurts.com. Cynthia, I am really, really excited to have you on the show today. As I said in my introduction, I really do feel that you epitomize what makes a makeshift mom. And when we initially sent you the show request, we thought, well, we come on and we talk about, you know, what it's like to be a mom and balancing the roles that we have as wife and then the responsibilities of motherhood. But as I dug deeper, I found out the true definition of makeshift, and it means temporary, which was perfect as a definition because to me that's what you do in your community, in your church, with young men and women, where you create teachable moments with them and serve as sort of a temporary mom when they either do not have one or they're in need of some additional support. Now, I know I've said a mouthful here, but how would you define a makeshift mom?
Well, Kamish, you know, I absolutely agree with you. In fact, as you and I were talking about, you know, what most of us think of makeshift, you know, and what I generally think of is just somebody who pulls it all together, you know. And again, as we talked more about that whole temporary nature and makeshift is being able to make do, so to speak, you know, when I think about being the makeshift mother, you do it all the time. You know, it doesn't mean that mom's not in the home. Sometimes mom's just not available at that moment. And so really all of us are makeshift mothers if we take the opportunity to be that. You know, it doesn't mean that there is a deficiency or a deficit. It just means that all of us have something to give. And I think that it's our responsibility to look around and see what we see. And when we see that mothering needs to be there, you know, we're the one to do it.
Absolutely. So it sounds like you're saying it's the ability to instill traditional values into our children, either our own children or children within the community. Do you believe in the notion of it takes a village?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. You know, and it takes a village whether you have a strong village or not, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
You know, some of us are blessed, you know, like myself. I had a very strong mom and she's still with me today. I depend on her like I did when I was 10, you know, we talk 5 times a day. And yet, you know, even having that great support system, there's always room for somebody else to put their hands on you and give you a different perspective, a little bit of wisdom or something like you talked about, those traditional values, that sometimes you only hear from a different person. Again, it's not always that mom is gone, but it just takes different voices to get through at different times. And so I absolutely believe it takes a village. And I want to be part of that village for a lot of people. And I think that we all can be.
And you're serving out that purpose even today with your Raising Queens summits and your book that you've recently released.
Yes.
Why do you think instilling values in our children or in others' children is so very important?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting that when you are the child, you know, and I'll just go back to my own childhood, when I was getting those values, the truth of the matter is I just didn't appreciate them. In fact, I didn't even know I was getting them. But as I became a woman, I can remember driving down the street having some aha moments, and, you know, maybe I'd be thinking about a situation I was dealing with, and I would hear my mother's words come to my mind, and I go, oh, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's really important to instill those values because, again, you're just not always going to get it as a child. But I promise that when you hit adulthood, the things that you need that are being given to our children, you know, we don't get them until years later. And so we've all got to do our part of instilling that early enough and often enough so that when we get to the point that we become women, we have what we need. That's why I think it's so important to instill those values early, often, and from as many people as can.
Absolutely. I truly believe that it serves as like a subliminal purpose to hear it from different avenues and have it reiterated or reinforced over and over again. So I agree 100%. And what are important values, in your opinion, do we need to help instill in our children?
Oh, my goodness. I could start from the top and and go down. You know, they seem to be endless. And, you know, one thing I really think about all the time is timeless values. I mean, those are the things that are really important to me, and I get kind of tickled the more mature I get. I won't say older, but I'll just say more mature. You know, I get really tickled that, you know, I wonder when I've become this wise old lady, you know, because to me the values that are important are values that don't change. Things like teaching a person how to have a high character, how to be a person of integrity, you know, how to have a great work ethic, how to be, you know, a person who's courageous and like yourself, just will go for something. You know, when I look around today, sometimes, and again, it's not always girls. I want to be clear about that, that, you know, the work that I seek to do doesn't always take kids and girls. I talk to more adult women, I think, than I do than girls. I'm open to talk to anybody that's a female like me. If I've got something for her, I have it. I want her to have that. But getting back to those values, you know, sometimes we just haven't been taught even to go for something, to be courageous, to follow our dreams and passions. To me, those are the things that we have to instill, because when you get to a certain age, it kind of becomes, well, you know, it wasn't a part of my life when I was a kid. I didn't go for it then, or I never developed a great work ethic, or I never learned this thing. Maybe it's too late for me. And the reality it's never too late. But the more exposure we have to those kind of values, I mean, if you've got a great work ethic, you know, you can pretty much outwork and overcome anything. You know, if you've got great character, you're going to have some issues. We all do. If you've got character and integrity, you've got the same issues as the person without. But now you have a little something to help you weather that. And so those are the kind of things that I think is important to teach.
Absolutely. And that brings me to my next two questions. But first, can we instill those values in our children if we ourselves do not possess them?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Can we instill those values in our children if we ourselves don't possess them?
Wow, that's a low. That's that's a great question, Kamish. I don't think you can. You know, it's almost like, how can you get something that you don't have? And again, I'll just speak from personal experience. I believe that what I pour out today.
You're kind of breaking up on us, Cynthia. Is there are you going through a zone or?
No. I'm stationary. Can you hear me?
Awesome.
Okay.
Yes. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. Okay. I believe that what I'm experiencing today is really just overflow from what I received, you know, growing up during my developmental years. If it wasn't in me, how could I give it back? So I think that you absolutely have to possess what it is you seek. Otherwise, it's just theory. One thing that we talk about in my business life is that people can smell a phony a mile away. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that you can't teach work ethic, but it becomes pretty clear, you know, if you don't have any. It doesn't mean that you can't teach character and integrity, but people are going to know, you know, in a short while after talking with you, whether you're the person, you know, who's really capable of teaching that. So I truly believe you have to own it in order to give it out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so some of our parents may be thinking, you know, is it too late? Can I learn these values for myself and begin to put them in practice? Is it too late for my teen who has not been raised with these values to be able to institute them? What would be your response to them?
It's never too late. You know, in my day professional life, one of the things I work with was money. And I get people asking questions like, is it too late for me to plan to retire for retirement? It's never too late. I mean, if you are living and breathing, there's always time to make a change. In fact, you know, periodically I ask myself questions like, why am I still here? Like, literally, why am I still living on the earth? Because I got some more growing to do. And so, you know, one of the reasons that I wrote Raising Queens wasn't just for teenagers. It was for women that I encounter all the time that, you know, maybe never had that person teach them how to go from the, you know, from the boardroom to the ballroom and back, as we're going to talk about later, to the bedroom without losing yourself. And it's Absolutely. Never too late. All you have to do, there's so many resources. I mean, obviously, people can be resources. Books can be resources. There's so many educational tools nowadays that you can learn the things that you missed out on. And the more that you learn, the more you grow. We call it self-improvement. The more your life will change. So it's never too late.
Now, one thing that I don't hear you talking about in terms of instilling lifelong lessons with our children is using your money to possess monetary things. And some parents believe that if I buy my child this, then they'll have that, and they'll, I guess, be in the in crowd. Would you say that money plays a role in value setting?
You know, money is just a tool. It's not good and it's not bad. It simply does what you tell it to do and goes in the direction that you point it. And so, you know, we can use money to teach our kids all kinds of things. You know, getting back to that value system and that work ethic, you know, you can use money to teach them how to be good people. You know, one of the main things that we teach in Raising Queens, along with financial management, is generosity and compassion. You know, what better way do you know, than to use money than to teach people to be compassionate and to be generous and to have a care and concern for their, you know, brother and sister and fellow neighbor. So I absolutely think that we can use money in the right way. But in the same way, you know, as you said, if it's all about using money to acquire things, now we develop the characteristic of selfishness. You know, we develop that me-first attitude. So, again, money's going to do exactly what you tell it to do. It's just the tool that we use for whatever it is we want to teach as well as acquire.
Absolutely. And getting back to the topic of makeshift mom, how do we help other women around us either prioritize their children or prioritize helping out children in the community to see what you and I do as a makeshift mom is necessary and sometimes even essential?
Oh, my goodness. You know what? It's as simple as opening your eyes. If I can tell you a quick story, I have a lot of young ladies and teenage girls and women, you know, that I mentor in some regard. And several years ago, I have one young lady who's 16 years old now, and I've attended the same church for quite a while. And one Sunday after church, at that time, the young lady was 12 years old, and I was just kind of walking through and, you know, doing what I do, greeting everybody on Sunday. And she just came up and gave me the biggest hug in the world. Like, really? And, you know, I don't recall, I know her grandparents, I knew of her, but before that moment, I never had a connection with her. I didn't realize that she even knew, you know, who I was. And again, she's 12 years old, and she just comes up and gives me the biggest hug. And I don't take any credit. I really give the credit to God for this, that it was like instantly this little girl needed a connection with me as a woman. And so I kind of looked down at her, gave her a big hug back, and we had a brief conversation. And I knew, I talked with her grandmother, learned some things about her mom, that her mom wasn't in her life, so that she knew this was me.
Mm-hmm.
Was, and to mentor this teen that I would have never known, you know, had I not been intuitive enough to pay attention, not just a hug, but that the fact that there's more there. And so I'm just saying that those girls exist everywhere, and you don't have to have a degree in counseling, which I don't. You know, you do, I don't. You don't have to have a degree for that. You just got to be paying attention.
And connection. Sorry. And connection is really, really important. And that takes us into our first break. But stay tuned, because when we return, we're going to delve deeper into the early life of Cynthia Newman, if we can keep her on the phone, as she shares with us what informed her decision to work with our community's youth. Stay tuned.
Now, back to Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, today we are discussing creating yourself as a makeshift mom. And we're joined today by Miss Cynthia Newman, author of Raising Queens. To learn more about Cynthia, visit cnewinspiration.com. Also, if you're interested in purchasing her book, you would be able to visit cnewinspiration.com. Now, Cynthia, I want to take your message about instilling values into our community or our community's youth to a deeper level. You recently released a book entitled Raising Queens, and each year you host a Raising Queens Summit, which has become quite popular. What early life experiences informed your decision to write this book?
Well, Kamish, let me start by making the statement, someone is always watching. And what I mean by that is I was raised by a single mom, as you know, which is the basis of Raising Queens. I'm the youngest of five girls. And my sister, closest to me in age, is 4 years apart. So by the time I would have been getting into elementary school, she would have been leaving and headed to junior high school and so forth. So it caused me to spend a lot of time with my mom. And, you know, the thing that occurred to me is that I paid attention to everything. So, you know, the things that my mother did as a woman, at that time, our dad was in the home, but he wasn't always there and wasn't always present. And sometimes when he was present, it wasn't the greatest of circumstances, domestic violence, et cetera. And so I was always watching how my mother was handling it. And again, you know, as I alluded to earlier, that you don't realize the values that are being instilled in you until you become a woman. And so as I started thinking about my childhood and the lessons that I learned, I started realizing that, wow, a lot of kids just didn't get the upbringing I did. You know, I was growing up in the 70s. There I go date myself again. But it seemed that domestic violence was, I won't say prevalent, but I'll say that it wasn't uncommon. It wasn't anything for me to talk to another young lady and find out that, you know, that was going on in her household as well. But the way that my mother dealt with it, the way that she didn't lose herself in the process, she didn't lose her kids, and, you know, she always found time for me, let me know that, man, here's some stuff that I'm learning because I'm in close proximity to a great mom that I want to start teaching with others. And so it really was those early childhood experiences that let me know I wanted to do something with what I learned. And here's another key. When I wrote the book, I realized that what had happened to us 30 and 35 years ago didn't happen in vain. You know, sometimes we think, man, why did this happen to my family? And it hit me when I became a woman that it happened so you could pass those lessons on to somebody else. And so definitely the early childhood lessons are what led me to where we are today with Raising Queens and the summit and the workshops, et cetera.
Absolutely. And what then inspired you to start your annual summits?
Oh, just wanting to give more, you know, just knowing again that I had and have my mother on a daily basis. As I mentioned, my mother's still living. She's very much a part of the summit. If you talk to my mom, she'll say things like, oh, this is all about me. She's 74 now. So in her mind, it's all about her. And it really is all about her because I wanted my mother to be a mentor to millions of women because she did that great of a job with me. So the summit is a one-day empowerment event for women and girls. And again, getting back to the topic, makeshift mom, right? On that day, we have a lot of women who are professional women, successful in their career or in their lives, that we have teaching workshops and giving life lessons and talking about how they got successful in business or, you know, teaching the girls the kind of values that they need to be a great young woman. This year we did a Girls Feed Mentoring where we took the values that we teach through Raising Queens, and it was almost like a speed dating session, but they got six mentors, 10 minutes each, and they just had to give their best tips on some of the values that we teach. So it was really my desire to want to give back even more and to have a day of focused empowerment that the girls and women could take on that led us to doing the Raising Queens Summit.
Yes, and I had the fortunate opportunity of attending your Raising Queens Summit this year. And what I got away from it was that you create an environment where you even cultivate a sense of love and belonging, which seems to be at the core of what it takes to instill sustainable lessons for our children. Do you believe that love and belonging is something that's necessary for our children in terms of, you know, being negatively influenced by their peers when they grow up and things of that nature?
Absolutely. You know, everything starts with love. In fact, again, I've been at the same church for a while, and one of the models that we always say as our church is that we don't get everything right, but we do get the love part right. And if you get love right, you know, the Bible says love covers a multitude of sins, and it really does. So if we can just instill the love, in fact, it's the love and belonging that allows the people to receive, you know. So if I start out by loving you and go back to the little girl with the hug, imagine if she had come up to me and given me a hug and my response was to push her away. Who are you? I don't know you. Who's your mother? You know, where? Imagine if that was my response. Would she really have wanted to stay connected to me? Would she really be open to, you know, the things that she and I have been able to do? You know, now I go to her school and sit and talk with her teachers when necessary and, you know, hang out with her and try to be that big sister slash mom that she needs. She wouldn't be open to any of that if the love and the belonging wasn't there. And so you're exactly right. When you come to the summit, you know, I always say everybody's going to get something different, but everybody can get something, even if it's just that, man, for a day. I saw some fantastic women who loved me, and I want to be like them, even when if I'm an adult, when I grow up.
Okay, and back to your childhood. Would you consider your community when you were a child as being a culture of makeshifts? And what I mean by that, did you feel like it was a village culture in terms of your upbringing?
I did. When you read Raising Queens, one thing that you'll read, I think it's chapter 13 or 14, but I went to church all the time. I don't know who, I'm sure somebody listening has the same experience. I laugh about it now, but literally it was Sunday morning, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. There was always something going on at the church. And my mother made sure that I was always there, even if she wasn't there. So what ultimately happened is that, you know, in that environment, when my mother wasn't there, there were plenty of moms that my mother made it known. And here's the key, too, when we're talking about makeshift. You know, sometimes we think that the makeshift mom isn't there, but it takes a strong mom to say, hey, I'm not here, and when I'm not here, you're my daughter's mother. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I had a lot of mothers, and my mom made it clear that they were free to instill wisdom in me, but they were also free to discipline me. And so, man, you need that community. You know, I don't know. You tell me. I don't know if we really live in a climate today where people really welcome the makeshift mom necessarily to discipline their children. Yes, and still love, but, hey, you can only go so far, right? It just wasn't like that in the 70s. So I don't know. What do you see that? Do you feel like, you know, people make themselves available to really extend themselves, that people can be a mother to their child?
Right. It's really intriguing to me, because what I do see is that people don't want to take the responsibility of developing connections or even go through the emotional ups and downs of making connections with younger children who perhaps need additional support or lack a mother figure. And they kind of brush it off as, you know, it's not my child. And so, you know, I think you're so right when you talk about it being necessary to have this culture of it takes a village. Do you think that we can reinvent that culture in our communities today?
I do, one at a time, you know, and I always caution myself about not getting too far, you know, not feeling like I have to do it all today, if that makes any sense. And the reason I say one at a time is because in the same way it takes a relationship and it takes love and belonging to make that child feel like they want to receive your values and wisdom, it also takes that same thing with the parent when the parent is around. So, you know, again, going back to my childhood, one of the things that made this makeshift mommyhood, if I can make that term up, that made that available was the fact that my mother was open to it. And she had a great relationship with the women that she was allowing to be a part of my life. So I think that the more we can engage moms, you know, when they are around, then definitely I think that culture can exist. But one other thing I want to say about the Raise the Queen Summit, too, is we intentionally make it a day for women and girls because mm-hmm. we want to connect the generations together. And I think that's real important. Like, you know, there are women's conferences available. There are girls' conferences available. But to have an opportunity where the women and girls can engage and learn from each other, to me, that's makeshift mommyhood at its best right there.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Now, do you plan on ever doing a book for young boys?
Oh, I get that question all the time. Here's the answer. You know, they say never, but I will say on December 3rd, 2013, I'm a girl. So, now here's the other piece of that. I am now blessed to be raising a one-year-old son. And so, you know, as time goes on, I don't know what the future holds. I have a fantastic husband. He's an excellent father. And I, along with other people, continue to say to him, okay, she's got the girls' things. When are you going to start doing the boys and men things? And he's not quite biting. So we'll see. On this day, no, but who knows what the future holds. I'm open.
Well, I really hope so. I want to ask you one more question before we go to break. What I really enjoy about the description of your book, Raising Queens, is that you say it uses the old school wisdom that you term as mama-isms. Am I saying that correctly?
Mama-isms, yep.
Would you like to share with us one of those mama-isms?
Oh, I sure can. I can share many. As time goes on, but one of the best ones, I just celebrated my wedding anniversary yesterday, and people ask me, how'd you get, thank you, 27 years, wow. And I'm only 28, go figure. But people ask me all the time, why did you get married so early? So I won't tell you the full story. You'll have to get the book for that. But just remember this mama-ism, why buy the cow if you can have the milk free?
Oh, my goodness. I've heard that.
Said all of the time. And so what that meant, well, you know what that meant. She meant that there should be no sex without commitment. So getting mm-hmm. back to values, that's something that we don't really teach today. But when I was a young woman going to college and getting serious with my husband and boyfriend, that's what I heard her say in my head. And that's what I mean that when she started saying it as a little girl, it didn't make much sense. But as I became a woman, it mattered. It made sense. And I think that it's those kind of mama-isms that have really caused me to be who I am today and doing the things that I'm doing.
And that takes us into our next break. Stay tuned. When we come back, Cynthia will share with us how to impart the use of good judgments through our children within the community or our own children. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back. Today we are discussing creating yourself as a makeshift mom. Today our featured guest is Cynthia Newman, who has shared with us some conventional wisdom regarding developing herself as a makeshift mom and why it is important as a community we help instill these values within our children. To learn more about Cynthia Newman, visit cnewinspiration.com. Cynthia, we've talked at great length about being a makeshift mom, why it's important, and instilling values. And this topic, I have to tell you, has generated quite a buzz where mothers or even fathers are wondering, how do we impart these values that we mentioned earlier into our children today?
Wow. And, you know, I know it's got to generate a buzz because so much is available to our kids nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, now you've got, well, let's just go back in the day, right? Back in the day, we had mom, we had dad, we had the community, we had television, which you didn't get too much of, and then it was go outside and play and come back, right? Mm-hmm. Today, you've got Facebook, you've got Instagram, you've got Twitter, you've got Foursquare. You've got magazines, you've got YouTube, endless places for your kids to get, you know, information.
Right.
Not necessarily wisdom, but information. Mm-hmm. And so I think that one of the ways that parents can instill those values and make sure their kids get values is to take control again. I really do. And, you know, I hate to say it. Well, I don't hate to say it. It needs to be said that, you know, we can't get too friendly with our kids all the time. You know, we at some point we have to be clear about what expectations exist in our home. You know, we have to limit the stimuli. I think that we always say that our kids get through their ear gate and through their eye gate. And even what comes in and out of their mouth gate, you know, we have to be in charge of that as parents. So I think that's the only way that a parent can get to the place where they're able to instill the values they want is you've got to control what the child is exposed to in the first place. And again, you know, that's coming from a new mom, you know, but a new mother raising a son, but a really experienced makeshift mom.
Absolutely. And as a mom myself, I oftentimes fear the ideal of my son getting wrapped into the wrong crowd where they haven't necessarily been instilled with the values that we teach at home. How do we prevent that fear from kind of taking over and wanting to control every aspect of our child's life and being okay with, I guess, negative influences coming into our child's life?
Well, you know what? I'm going to keep going back to what we were talking about, that whole, first of all, the love piece. I think that when you are doing a great job with your kids and your kids know that you love them and that anything you tell them, again, you and I know that every lesson we get, we're not going to implement at that moment. And at the moment, it's going to seem, oh, my God, my parents are so strict, you know, when we know that those negative kids exist. But I think that if you do a good job laying the foundation for your kids, you know, we probably don't give kids enough credit. I'm guilty. My son is one, and I still do things for a one-year-old that my mother, who's a lot older, just doesn't do. And I'm thinking, man, I'm playing this kid short, right? So it's probably the same thing that we do with our teens, that when we lay a great foundation, when we set limitations, which is one way of exhibiting love, you know, setting limitations. Kids need discipline. Adults need discipline. Kids need discipline. So I think that when we set the foundation, when we put in a place of discipline, that even when those negative influences exist, if we give our kids the right stimuli, they're always in a positive environment. They know, you know, they may not be able to articulate it like we can or make the same judgment we can, but I think that even when they encounter negative influences, they're able to counterbalance that with who they know they are and what's really right. And I think we got to give them leeway to do that, too. Otherwise, how do they know they can make a good judgment if we don't allow them to make a judgment, even if sometimes they make a mistake and then go back and correct it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, well, when it comes down to relationships, we really have to be able to differentiate, or our children have to be able to differentiate between what makes a good or healthy relationship versus some identifiable triggers of an unhealthy relationship. Could you explain for us what you would consider a healthy versus an unhealthy relationship in terms of peer relationships?
Sure. You know what? To me, what makes a healthy relationship for kids is the same thing that makes it for adults. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I write a blog called Life by Design. In that blog, I'm always giving out inspiration, motivation, elevation, and transformation. But a lot of times I talk about who you're hanging around and what kind of support do you get from them. You know, so what makes a great relationship? You ought to leave your friends feeling better than you did before you got with them. You know, if you've got friends that are uplifting and supportive, those are keys to a great relationship. You know, even when you're a kid, even when you're 10, you know, kids can be really, really cruel. I'm sure you remember that. All of us have something that some little kid, did you have that, something that they would just ride you about? And so
absolutely.
If that kid is in your friend peer group, then you've got the wrong friend peer group, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to learn how to identify what's supportive for me. You know, is it a two-way relationship? And again, I remember being a kid, you can always determine if it's a relationship where we're both giving to the relationship or if it's one-sided. You know, supportive, two-way, uplifting, you know, if it's a positive relationship, is the child encouraging you to do, or again, even adults, are they encouraging you to go for something great? Or are we always getting in trouble together? You know, I think that those things don't change across time. And what makes for a great relationship as a child, helping your child identify that early, they're going to be able to keep those values and understand what makes great relationships as adults as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's really hard for us as parents to understand how to, I guess, broach these topics with our children. How would you say you would broach this topic with a child who is going into a friendship and you're noticing that the friend is not such a good friend to them?
Wow. You are asking me some tough questions, Kamish. I'm going to go have to get my psychology degree after this.
Well, they want to know.
Job. That's what makes you a great talk show host. Well, you know, awesome. How can I broach that subject? You know, I think that you've got to be wise. Let me say it that way. You know, there's a way to present information, and I think that if you approach it as in, you know, that's not a person you want to be with, then what's going to happen? They're going to want to be with that person, right? I mean, that's just human nature, especially kids' nature, is to do exactly what you say don't do. That's what they want to do. So I think that when you see your child in a negative relationship, you ought to ask a whole lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And again, that's what I do in my business life is, you know, when we're trying to get to an answer, often we know the answer, but we're more successful if we can help people get to the answer on their own as opposed to telling them. So just remember this phrase. If I say it, they doubt it. If they say it, it's true. Okay? And what I mean by that is maybe instead of, again, telling the child that's not a person you want to be with, hey, let's talk about Johnny's behavior. So, you know, Johnny, who knows? Johnny wrote graffiti on that locker today. Is that something that you think is a good thing to do or a bad thing to do? Oh, Mommy, that's a bad thing to do. Okay, well, there's the first answer right there. He just said it's a bad thing to do. Well, okay, so is that something that Mom and Dad taught you to do? Well, no, that's not something that I should do. Well, do you think that Johnny's given you some, you know, good ways to grow up and develop some good behaviors or some bad ways? So, again, and that's just a rough example on the spot, but I'm just saying that the more you learn how to pull the answers out of your kids, you know, by asking them questions as opposed to telling them you want them what to do, and then helping them discover the answer for themselves, I think you could actually lead your child to really knowing how to make great decisions, how to pick good relationships, but you're also teaching them skills. You know, again, not just giving it to them, but you're teaching them how to actually develop attitudes, how to identify behaviors, et cetera. And so that's one way that I would do it, and I pray that that worked with my son.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to be honest with you, Cynthia, it sounds like you already got your psychology degree because that was a very good answer, or at least you need to develop your own certification program.
Oh, I'll leave that to you.
Now, we touched on this a little bit earlier, and what I've read is that children who lack values also lack a sense of love and belonging, similar to what we were describing. And love and belonging, of course, is at the core of what makes us human. And as a result, they reach out to the wrong crowd. Would you say this leads to a child not feeling of value or significant in their home?
I would, and you know what? What you're really, let me say how I interpret it, self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times I find that some of the things that kids deal with is simply or stems from a lack of self-esteem. You know, maybe not feeling worthy, maybe not feeling love, maybe not being validated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's one of the things that we really have to do a great job with of kids is just allowing them to feel great about who they are. You know, I don't watch the news a lot, honestly, because it's too negative.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do watch the news, I'm always looking at, man, where must this person come from? What must their upbringing have been like? And I just get the sense that, you know, if we can do a great job of instilling self-esteem, you know, valuing a child for who they are, you know, maybe your child's not the best student, but they're a great artist. You know, maybe they're not a great artist and, you know, you're a family of artists, but they're a great scientist. Who knows? You know, maybe they've got a great math aptitude. And it's the same thing, I think, in marriage, too, is the more we can uplift kids and adults for who they are, highlight their good points, and help them learn how to minimize their flaws. It doesn't mean they go away, but celebrate them for who they are. I think that that is what really allows a child to stay away from those negative influences because they're valued for who they are.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it sounds like what you're saying is how we help our children to feel more valuable. We show them unconditional love. We share our experiences and allow ourselves to be vulnerable with them. We spend time with them, and we share the mama-isms that I think you just created a new mama-ism on this show. But we share our unconventional wisdom with them. Let's take another quick break. We'll be back more on Being a Makeshift Mom with Cynthia Newman. Stay tuned.
Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley continues on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to Healing Conversations. Today we are discussing creating yourself as a makeshift mom with Cynthia Newman, who has shared with us thus far all of her conventional nuggets. And it has really been great, Cynthia, to hear you talk about how you create yourself for young people in the community as a makeshift mom. And I want to go back to something we talked about a little bit earlier, insofar as mothers or women out there who feel like it's not their responsibility to lend a helping hand to a child in need. What would you say to such a person?
Oh, man. You know, I would say that all we have is the future. And that sounds kind of like a colloquialism, so to speak, but it really is. And so it is our responsibility, because we want to create, you know, a better world. We want to create girls that turn into great women that can then give back, you know, to other girls who turn into great women. And so I do know it's easy to turn your head. And I will be honest with you, Kamish, you know, when you get ready to tackle a work, and it doesn't have to be a formalized work like raising queens, we're still very grassroots, but it's a lot of work. And so I actually understand, you know, wanting to turn your head. I really do. But I think the part of me that knows that I'm here for a purpose won't let me do that. And so I'm just asking anybody who's listening that, you know there are some people in your life that need your help. You identify some needs, and it doesn't just have to be girls, it can be boys. Thank God my husband and I have been able to be very instrumental in the lives of 7 nephews before we ever had kids. And it was only because we had a heart to say, somebody's got to step in and help out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I would just say to those people, again, men or women, just start with one. You know, don't get overwhelmed. Don't do a Raising Queen Summit. You know, don't write a book. But the one time that you see a young lady or a young man needs your help, just ask the question, how can I help? In fact, maybe, again, it just starts with a hug. And you'll be amazed what your one hug can do to change the world. So here's, if I can say this real quick, here's what I think all the time. That I always say that God has given all of us a gift. Normally I'm talking about in the making money arena, a gift that he expects us to make our living with. Sometimes it's as simple as a smile. Like, you know, I think we underestimate, John Maxwell calls it the law of process, that we underestimate what happens, you know, we underestimate what happens daily as opposed to what happens over a period of time. So it's like that one little smile could start the ripple effect. In fact, what he says is leadership happens daily, not in a day. But, you know, we underestimate the little bitty things that we can do daily. Give somebody a hug. Give somebody a smile. Hey, how you doing? How's it going? Hey, you know, if you need to talk, I'm here. Those little bitty things, talk about love and belonging. That's love and belonging right there. Mm-hmm. It's not always that, you know, let's go back to our money conversation. It's not always the buying the sneakers, even for parents. But the fact that mommy took time, like my one-year-old, hey, mommy, let's go get in the tent. I'm too big for the tent, but mommy needs to find a way to squeeze into that tent. And so that's what I'm saying, you know, for the people who may have turned their head because it's not your child. It's just one little thing you can do that can change the life of that child forever. And it doesn't have to cost you any money. And it doesn't even have to take a whole lot of time. But just open your eyes and look and see who needs your help.
Right, right. And I want to personally thank you, Cynthia, for extending yourself so graciously, because I know the many roles that you take on as a mom and or a makeshift mom. And you bring me to my next point. It sounds like you have been very lucky in learning, I guess, early your true purpose in life. And we all know what it's like to balance our role as a mom, as a wife, as a career woman, or et cetera. How do you do it and stay sane?
Wake up, really, really early and pray a lot. Those are the two answers that I give to everybody. I am really blessed in that, once again, I had great parents and a great mom, great surroundings, village, that always poured into me. And so some of the skills and gifts that I've been using today, those started developing very early. I didn't know what I would do with them. I certainly didn't know a raising queen, you know, would exist or anything I'm doing. But I kind of knew the types of things that I loved to do. So one of the things that helps me, along with getting up very early and a lot of prayer, is doing the work for the passion of it.
Right.
And so that's really how I get it done, because, of course, I write my blog once a week. And when I'm getting up at 3 o'clock or 4 or 5 on Wednesday morning, man, if I didn't love the people that would miss it if it wasn't there, ooh-wee, I would want to stay in that bed and go back to sleep.
Right.
So I think that, you know, having been able to tune into what's my passion really helps. I mean, when I'm working on whatever I'm working on at the time, when I'm passionate about it, I could lose sleep. I could be up all night. I could do it for free. And a lot of times I do it, you know, for free. But it's because I just really have that heart to want to help. And it's not easy. You know, I'm very tired a lot, and I do have a one-year-old. But let me say this, too, about being a makeshift mom, that to me the most important mom I can be is a mother to my son. And so in all the things that I do, I always try to keep in perspective, you know, that yes, he's one, but I'm laying his foundation too. And so it's all those things that help me balance it, because I want to be a great mother. I want to be a great wife. I want to be a great servant, you know, to my community too. But I really want to make sure I get those two things right. And that's what helps me balance it most.
Absolutely. And that takes me to my next point. Do you ever feel that by taking on so many roles that you're unable to give your all in each of them?
Yeah, I do. And so, I know you probably want to know, but yep, I sure do. One of the things that I learned and that I write about in my blog, by the way, I want to give the blog site. I know we haven't given that yet.
Go right ahead.
www.lifebydesign.typepad.com. That's lifebydesign.typepad, typepad.com. But one of the things that I talk about in Life by Design is my triple D process. What things do I have to do? What things do I have to delegate? And what things do I have to delete? So whenever I start feeling overwhelmed, I stop and I start writing down all the roles that I'm doing. You know, church stuff, office stuff. My husband and I own a business together. Motherhood stuff, parenting stuff, community projects. Okay, of all that stuff, what things do I need to not do? Because sometimes we just do stuff because they're good to do, but they're not good for us to do. So I start looking at what things can I delete? What kinds of things can I delegate? I'm blessed to have an office manager, so maybe there are some things that I need to have her do. You know, maybe there are some things that I can delegate, like getting the house clean, even if it's just once in a while. And then what things do I have to do myself? And that kind of stuff, you know, helps keep me balanced, as well as listening, in my case, to my husband. And to my son, and when it's too much, when they need some of my time, then I got to be wise enough to say, hey, I want to serve the role, but right now they need me more. And so I've really tried to develop a process to do that.
Incredible. So it sounds like you understand something that I truly believe in, which is that we make time in our lives for things that matter most to us, and what matters most to you is that of being a wife and being a mother. Is there anything, as we come to an end, you'd like to leave with our audience today who want to impart good judgment in their children or within the children in the community?
Yes, absolutely. And that is that you can never spend too much time with your child, never. You know, you can never give too much love to your child, and everything starts right there. You know, whether you're makeshift momming, there are lots of friends. I have lots of friends who don't have children yet. I didn't have children for a long time. And so, you know, you can never give too much love. And just stop and make the time. Prioritize. Decide what's important to you. But most importantly, decide that if and when the opportunity comes for you to make a difference, even in your own child's life or in your own household, to change, to be better, to make a difference, that you'll do that. That's what I would say matters most.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. You know, Cynthia, thanks again for joining us. It has truly been a pleasure having you on. Could you tell everyone how we can purchase a copy of your book?
Absolutely. You can go to www.cnewinspiration.com. www.cnewinspiration.com. You can purchase your book there. I'll be glad to send you an autographed copy. You can also purchase it on Amazon.com. It wouldn't be autographed if it comes from that source, but you can purchase it there. You can even reach out to me on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. The New Inspiration is my handle on Twitter, and Cynthia Newman is my handle on Facebook as well. And if you'd like to send me a personal email, you can email me at cynmedia@aol.com.
And will there be another summit this year?
Yes, we're working on the summit this year right now. And we usually have our first meeting coming up very soon, but we've already talked about how we can make it bigger and better, expose it to more people. And I also want to make your audience aware, and you have to check my website and the blog site for this, but we do workshops during the year as well that feed into the summit. And those happen about once every other month. Just, again, teaching value. So, again, right. If you can contact me at any of those sources, especially consider accessing my blog site because I post a lot of things there as to what's coming down the pike. You can stay connected with the Raising Queen Summit, and it's for women and girls, any girls 9 and up and all women. We've got something to empower you.
Awesome. Thanks so much again, Ms. Cynthia. And I am definitely looking to get more involved in what your mission and vision is as we carry out this next year. Join us next time as we host licensed marriage and family therapist Nathan McGuire. We will be discussing coping with the first holidays following a separation or divorce. Thanks again for listening to Healing Conversations with Commish Nunley, where we believe what makes you vulnerable also makes you beautiful. Till next time, take care.